5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Perth, I am so proud of you. I'm proud of the 1,000 people who peacefully and responsibly took to Forest Chase last night to join the now global Black Lives Matter movement. What is happening in the US as we speak is horrifying. But what is happening in our own backyard should make us just as mad. More than 400 Indigenous people have died in police custody here since 1991. WA has a dark history with police brutality. One of the most horrific was the killing of a 16-year-old kid called John Pat in 1983, which then sparked a royal commission. Last year, Ms. Clark was killed in Geraldton. A policeman has since been charged with her murder. And judging from the turnout last night, we're finally mad enough to take action and demand change in a strategic and sophisticated way. Well done. We should be encouraged that there is a glimmer of hope here. Listening and education will spur change, not looting Louis Vuitton like we've seen some do overseas. For those who are rolling their eyes at this story and me getting on my soapbox, I'm sorry if you're bored talking about racism. But for just a moment, imagine what it must be like living with it every damn day. They're my thoughts, and you may disagree with me. If so, let me know. Drop me a note at thewestlive@wanews.com.au. Coming up on today's show, the Minister for Trade and Tourism. He's the federal guy, and they've got to sort out this mess with China. Also, I'll chat to a doctor from Royal Perth Hospital, where yesterday they had their busiest day in the ED all year. We're going to find out why. Also, Dockers General Manager Peter Bell with the latest from inside Frio's AFL bubble. All that and more coming up in today's show.
The West Live. The West Live with Jenna Clark.
Joining me on the line this morning is the Federal Trade and Tourism Minister, Simon Birmingham, calling in from not-so-sunny Adelaide this morning. I guess we have a lot in common with Adelaide over here in Perth. Minister, thank you so very much for joining us. I guess first cab off the rank when it comes to things like trade and what I've been hearing from a lot of people, why don't we make our own stuff here in Australia?
Well, Jenna, we do make a lot of things in Australia, but we also make a lot more than we need. It may be a surprise to many people to know that for the last 27 months, Australia has exported more than we import. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're a country that sends goods and products and services out to the world, and that we now routinely record trade surpluses. But we don't make everything. Mm-hmm. However, when you look at the experience of this pandemic and these troubled times, we've seen that we do still have some amazing advanced manufacturers who have been able to pivot on a dime in many ways. Mm. That those who were making gin started making hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
Those who were making fast food wrappers started making face masks. Mm. And were able to scale up our manufacturing of respirators and things as well. So I actually think that across all sectors of the Australian economy, we have many different assets and strengths, and we've demonstrated that even in those areas that we talk ourselves down a bit, like advanced manufacturing, we actually have some highly capable businesses who've shown just how they can help in these times of need.
Yeah, that is a great point. But I guess there's a lot of talk now about people want to see, you know, big manufacturing to kick off, to almost kickstart new industries. Are we going to see cars rolling off the production line and things like that? Because I think we're used to seeing specifically here in WA, iron ore is a massive economic booster for us. It's our main source of revenue. So I guess we're not going to see figures like that for a number of years. But what do we need to be doing? What can the government be doing to ensure that we are working on new industry now?
So our industry policy is all about making sure that Australian business can be as competitive as possible and that it's attractive to invest in growing new businesses. If you're going to have successful advanced manufacturing sectors, they need reliable energy, affordable energy. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that we have the energy roadmap that that involves making gas affordable and available right across the country supporting renewables, but ensuring that's done in a way that keeps affordability and reliability in the energy mix is crucial. The work the Prime Minister's now announced as part of the JobMaker program to invest more in reforming and delivering skills training and in getting unions and employers to the table to look at how we can make our industrial relations systems more competitive. Mm. They're all things that go to making businesses operate in a more competitive environment. That makes it more conducive to investment. That means whatever type of industry it is, but particularly those that might be heavier industries, mm-hmm. that might be more in labour intensive, you've got an environment where it can stand up again. Now, I don't think we'll be seeing cars rolling off a production line in Australia again soon. Mm-hmm. We're a country that where consumers have chosen to buy a whole range of different cars. We have the most diversified car fleet in the world, and we had that while we were still making cars in Australia.
Yeah.
But what we can always be aspiring to do is to have even more manufacturing of components in Australia,
sure.
which does happen. We are still making components for cars that then get shipped to Thailand and to other countries into their production lines.
Mm. What I find really fascinating is around how now there is this rhetoric that is probably coming out, and this is only anecdotally, but a lot of people are saying we need to buy Australian first and things like that. And that's all well and good, but when you can go and buy an Australian-made T-shirt for $50 as opposed to a $3-made T-shirt from Kmart, what would the impetus be? Is there any government assistance that can help in terms of like driving down the cost of locally produced goods and services like that?
Well, this is where I think we need to, you know, be mindful of the fact that we're a trading nation that benefits greatly from exporting, and we shouldn't be aspiring to a view that absolutely everything should be made here.
Mm-hmm.
Because if every other country took that approach,
yeah.
That would, of course, see our exports crash.
Yeah.
And as a country that produces more than three times the amount of food that we need,
mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that those agricultural goods can get to the export markets. Mm-hmm. But I do want to make sure in those areas that we value add where we can, so that we're not just sending carcasses of meat, but if we can, we're sending premium cuts of meat that have already been packaged and branded in Australia and carry that seal of Australian quality and
mm-hmm.
approval.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, I know some manufacturers are taking the next step to actually do prepackaged meals made here in Australia and then exported to other markets around the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually taking an agricultural product in cattle or sheep and pushing it right through the value chain then into a manufacturing process and actually getting a final product that's got all of that value add to it. And that's where I think we can really drive the competitive advantage of Australia to further lift our exports, to further grow jobs,
mm-hmm.
not thinking that we're going to necessarily compete in making cheap T-shirts.
Yeah, sure. I guess barley has been, and barley tariffs have been on the minds of many Australians for the past couple of weeks. What is the federal government doing for Australian farmers?
So we are working hard with our barley producers in particular to firstly continue to defend their integrity. They're not people who go out and dump their product on global markets at cheap prices. They're not subsidised by government. They are producers who happen to be amongst the world's most productive and efficient, and that's why they can ship large volumes around the world of high-quality barley, competitively priced, but without subsidy. And so in this dispute with China, we will look at all of the avenues of appeal, both within the Chinese system and through the World Trade Organization. But while we're doing that, we're also working to see where else we can try to help Australian barley producers find alternative markets. China is a big market, but it's not the only market.
Mm-hmm.
Western Australian barley to Japan more than doubled last year, up some 122% to more than $180 billion of exports of barley heading to Japan. And it's that type of growth in other markets that we now need to seize while we try to rectify this issue of the anti-dumping claim made by China.
Have you heard from your Chinese trade counterpart? Because a couple of weeks ago, the calls were going unanswered. What's the update there?
Look, disappointingly, no. We've continued to reinforce publicly and privately that we would appreciate a discussion about these matters and that from the Australian government perspective, if there are difficult discussions to be had, And we'll always front up and we'll have them. And we'll have them in a respectful, engaging way. We may not always agree with all of our international partners, but we're always happy to have the discussion with them. And it's unfortunate that this type of stance has been taken.
Is there continual, you know, are there daily calls being put in? Is there someone on this job trying to get China to pick up the phone daily?
Well, we have people working daily on the China relationship. I wouldn't say that we're going into the embassy or China's Commerce Ministry every day pleading for a phone call.
Yeah.
China knows that we would like to have a ministerial-level discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But in the interim, we get on with everything else. I work closely with the industry sectors, the farming sector in the case of barley, other industry sectors, and with our department and our diplomats, including those in Beijing, and making sure that we're having engagement at the other levels of the Chinese system, that we're putting forward the strongest possible case to defend our industries. And we continue to see vast, significant trade flows between Australia and China that are mutually beneficial to both our countries. China's growth and progress has been fueled by things like WA's iron ore, and indeed now a much more urbanised, much wealthier population than China was decades ago, which is a success that we celebrate and applaud, also now looks to Australian produce and Australian food as a source of safe, high quality protein and nutrients that is important to their community too.
I guess this issue has become so inflamed. I mean, you just have to look on social media to some of the comments and it's sort of spiralling a little bit out of control. What exactly is the Australian government's issue with China?
So we see China as an important partner in the region. We have a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement in place that enables cooperation between Australia and China in a range of ways. China is also now well and truly a major world power once again. It's a country that has had issues, that we've had disagreements of policy position over for some period of time, issues in relation to human rights matters, our concern to make sure that there is full respect for matters of sovereignty across the region, including issues around ensuring that there is a successful outcome ultimately in relation to matters in the South China Sea. These are all important factors to ensure that we have regional stability, regional peace to go alongside regional prosperity, and that's why we work with countries right across the region in our engagement with China and with each other to try to ensure that.
If the issue is that China can be a bit of a bully, looking at the scenes coming out of the US right now, and obviously the US is a very big trade partner of ours, surely is that an issue for us dealing with the US moving forward, and in particular a US run by Donald Trump?
So the United States is our largest investment partner, just as China is our largest trade partner, and that shows the mix of relationships that Australia has. It's also not surprising, though. They are the number one and two largest economies in the world. And we should always just keep that scale in mind when people suggest that that we're too engaged with one or the other. Most countries of the world will have the United States and or China at the top of their investment and or trade relationship just because of the scale and size of those two economies. The US is clearly going through very troubled times right now in relation to this violence that we're seeing and the ongoing concerns in relation to racial tensions, and it should make us all very grateful for the fact that we are Australians living in Australia, and it's a reminder that we are not the same as any one other country in the world. We have our own values, our own approaches. We form strong alliances like we have with the US. We seek strong partnerships like we have with China. And we seek to work with all, being true to our values, being firm in the defence of the policy interests of Australia, but then always seeking to engage in a respectful way with our partners.
I guess the one thing that we need to focus on is that trade relationships take a long time, and specifically very lucrative ones take a long time to build. There's been a lot of focus on India and Indonesia for the past couple of weeks. Where else are we seeking to invest in Australian exports moving forward?
So what our government has sought to do over the last 6 years is really steadily open up opportunities for Australian businesses, and we've done that in large part through our negotiation of free trade agreements that give Australian exporters preferential access into the markets where we do free trade agreements. They get to land their products, their goods, their services in those markets without facing as many taxes, tariffs or other barriers to trade. And so our FTAs, not only with China but also with the other major North Asian economies of Japan and the Republic of Korea, have been very important to that. So too has the finalisation of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which gave us new market access terms into countries like Vietnam in our region, who have very high growth prospects and are seeing really exceptional returns in their economy, and a number of Australian businesses investing in growing the export relationship there, and also in growing some of their activities and their investments within Vietnam. The Trans-Pacific Partnership also gave us our first ever trade agreement with Canada, with Mexico, and on the 5th of July, we're happily going to see our agreement with Indonesia enter into force. And that has been talked about by Australian governments for many, many years to get that type of breakthrough. And we've done it, and it's about to happen. And this huge population right on Australia's doorstep is now going to be more open to our business engagement. But crucially, you can't always do it through a free trade agreement. And with India, we've outlined a comprehensive India economic strategy, and the second last overseas trip that that I made as Trade Minister before the travel restrictions came into place was to India, taking a delegation in February of this year of more than 100 Australian business people who are pursuing a range of different economic opportunities with India, and we take that market very seriously and are working comprehensively to try to grow that, which will be on show later this week when Prime Minister Morrison and Prime Minister Modi sit down with one another.
Yeah.
And virtually, I should say.
Yeah. Zoom in.
Correct.
I guess that is great, and the fact that there are some plans on the boil is fantastic. But how urgently do we need to repair our relationship with China? And is this your priority right now?
Look, my priority is to both maintain the trading relations that we have, and where they've been disrupted by COVID, to restore them, because the breakdown in global aviation and the disruption to markets right around the world has obviously caused a lot of disruption to many trading relations. And that's why, as a government, we're providing more than $100 million to air freight subsidies that is now securing vast sums of Australian produce, including a lot of fresh seafood out of WA, headed right around the world again, as we're getting those planes flying without passengers, but with cargo and with freight, which is crucial. But in addition to that, restoring and rebuilding of those ties, including making sure that we have that access into the China market, we are working hard to expand new opportunities for Australian exporters. Yes, they take time, but we also do need to be mindful of just how much we have grown our exports in recent years, how successful we've been in that regard, and therefore there's you know, great base for us in working with other emerging countries to try to do the same.
I guess short term in the economic prospects is tourism, which is another one of your portfolios. WA's border has been a bit of a hand-wringing issue for many of the leaders around the country. When do you think that they should come down, purely from your perspective as tourism minister?
Look, I respect what different state leaders have done in terms of, you know, their approach working through the National Cabinet and within their own jurisdictions to successfully suppress the spread of COVID-19. And WA's achievements have been remarkable, and I applaud Mark McGowan and his government for their success there and what they've achieved. And I understand that nobody wants to put that success at risk, because it is something that that we can be proud on the world stage of what we've done.
Yeah.
And logically, that means as you are reopening, you start with reopening things internally first. So get the restaurants and the pubs open properly.
Yeah.
Get people engaging across the community once again as they normally would. But assuming all of that is done safely, as different states are doing, then I would hope that we can move pretty quickly to see interstate restrictions lifted as well. I sit here in a state adjacent to WA in South Australia where there's been just one case, I think, in the last few weeks. The state is essentially COVID-free in terms of known cases and retains amongst the highest testing rates in the world. And our priority has got to be on making sure that people continue to understand if you've got a cough or a sore throat or anything, get tested.
Yeah.
Maintain high testing rates, maintain the tracing of that. And again, if people haven't downloaded the COVID Safe app or it's not open in the background on their phones at present, they should do that because that all helps. And then with that tracing, where an odd case comes up, we can move quickly to quarantine that individual and those around them who've been in contact. And they are the number one points of safeguard for us, that high testing, tracing, quarantining, so crucial.
Yeah.
In terms of the interstate borders, I hope we can see them open up after the states have opened up their internal restrictions, but they certainly shouldn't continue to be restricted any longer than is necessary, because the longer those restrictions are in place, the more many tourism operators will bleed, and the more that will hurt jobs in those regions and those businesses.
And speaking of that, we've seen, just anecdotally over the weekend, I've had friends in Perth try to book flights to Broome, and last week it was $199 to get there with Qantas, and as of Friday when the Premier announced that Broome will be opening up pretty soon, went up to $500. What are you going to do to fix domestic travel in this country? Because sometimes, you know, Perth people can't get to Sydney, they'd rather go to Bali because it's less expensive. We need to get people travelling in our own country. Are you going to put pressure on airlines to make it cheaper for us in Perth and you in Adelaide to get to places like Sydney and Broome?
We're having discussions with the airlines about just how important it is for them to operate in a price competitive way that encourages people to get out across the country, and especially to get to the regions that might traditionally be a little bit more reliant on international visitors, which is something, as Australia's tourism minister, I don't usually worry about Australians travelling across Australia. My focus is usually on getting international visitors to come to Australia.
Hence the Hemsworth.
And around 9 million people do each and every year when it's a normal year. And that's, you know, 9 million people who choose Australia because of the amazing experiences, the exceptional places, and the safety and the reliability and so on of Australia. And now our effort has got to be to try to get Australians to backfill some of that in terms of going to some of the places that those international guests would have gone to. And and I certainly acknowledge that, you know, up around Broome and sites like the Horizontal Falls are just incredible destinations. And so we're talking to the airlines. They have businesses to run, and we've seen in the case of Virgin just how challenging it can be to do that profitably, but we do want to make sure that they get the right model, and we're certainly determined that when a reconfigured Virgin comes back online, that we will make sure that they get to operate in a competitive environment where they have every chance of succeeding alongside Qantas.
Great. That is good to hear that you'll be keeping one eye on that. Federal Trade and Tourism Minister Simon Birmingham, thank you so very much for joining us on The West Live. Hope to chat to you again sometime soon.
Thanks. My pleasure. Anytime.
The West Live. Making news.
Matt Tinney from Sunrise, you and I are staring at the television agape at the scenes unfolding in Washington right now.
Unbelievable this morning.
I mean,
absolutely unbelievable. Did you see Amelia Brace, 7 News reporter in the US, whacked with a baton? The cameraman she's with, Tim Myers, hit with a shield and punched.
God. And why? Do we know why?
Well, they were in the path that had to be cleared President Donald Trump to walk across the road so he could hold up a Bible for a photo opportunity.
Got it. That, again, it's America. It makes total sense.
But, you know, it's meant to be what? The light on the hill, the greatest democracy in the world, and we're seeing these images.
These scenes are just out of control.
Quite at odds
aren't
with
they?
That.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's what's the vibe like when you're trying to put together your bulletin? Because I go, oh, yes, you're trying to focus on what's happening here.
The morning goes so quickly, and it's quite a jigsaw puzzle to piece it all together and where we fit in and what goes where. And of course, we had the Black Lives Matter rally here in Perth, so it's fitting that in.
Yeah.
That's the first rally that we've seen on Australian soil since the death of George Floyd.
Mm.
So, and happened in Perth, and of course, WA has a long history of Aboriginal deaths in custody.
Mm.
So the protesters have likened what's happened in the US, the police brutality, to those Aboriginal deaths in custody here in WA.
I was so encouraged by those scenes last night. I thought it was just a beautiful sign of solidarity, socially distant solidarity.
Yeah, it was difficult for them to socially distance themselves because there were so many people,
yeah.
hundreds upon hundreds of people, all different backgrounds, peaceful protest.
Mm.
They marched. There were about a dozen police officers monitoring the situation, but nothing like what we've been seeing in the US.
I can't even sunrise from about 8 o'clock this morning. It's been that all of the vision has been giving me motion sickness because these poor camos are being pushed and shoved by Secret Service and the military in Washington. It's horrific.
It just shows you how amazing these cameramen are to hold this heavy equipment, keep it steady, keep the shot steady so you don't feel like you're out on a, you know, on a boat out in the Indian Ocean. But they are. They're being thrown around. They're having to run and watch their own safety. Amelia over there was hit by a rubber bullet in the backside. Tim, the cameraman, was hit in the back of the neck by a rubber bullet. So they're going to be well and truly bruised come tomorrow, I think.
And they're still going. It's just...
Yes.
It's just insanity. And so I guess Trump has come out and he's spoken. He's sort of just said, you know, business as usual, guys. I'm now the president of Law and Order.
Yes, he's the president of Law and Order. No longer the president of Celebrity Apprentice. he is the president of Law and Order. He's basically put blame on all the states and the counties. Cool. You know, they didn't come in soon enough. We didn't have the National Guard in there soon enough. Not my fault, you know. So it seems to be, it's always a bit not my fault. The virus, isn't, not my fault.
Isn't that, I mean, just this, what you want with a leader. I've been thinking about it a lot, and I know because I'm an innately selfish person, but you just kind of go, I don't think that type of rhetoric from a leader in Australia would fly.
Oh, not at all. Definitely not in New Zealand.
No.
Could you imagine if they just flew in Jacinda into Washington just to sort it out?
She actually would probably do it.
She'd probably be able to do it. Do you think he'll win in November?
Yeah, it'd be pretty hard to topple first. But who knows? What, 40 million out of work?
No, hundreds of thousands. 2020, what a year. Could anybody guess what's going to happen next?
I would just like to go back to bed and I'll wake up and probably January 2nd, 2021. Just an extra day, just in case.
Just in case. Let's just skip it. Let's just skip the first day.
Is there an update? You are the coronavirus stats man. What's the update for us here in WA?
29 active cases.
Uh-huh.
The latest one we've had is a woman in her 30s who came back from the Middle East.
Uh-huh.
She'd been in hotel quarantine, so no issue of community transmission there. So, yeah, 29. Of course, we've got some of those people from the sheep carrier that are still battling the virus. Although there was one in hospital, but I've noted that nobody's in hospital with the virus at the moment. So that person, their condition must have improved.
I do have an update. On Friday, we spoke to the vet on board the LQ8. He said he wanted to test positive to coronavirus.
Right. Do we need a drum roll?
No, it's fine. He's texted me. Unfortunately, his result came back as negative. didn't work out. I actually had a strange flu in February that in hindsight could have been the coronavirus. If so, I would test negative. Yep, it's...
Why would he test negative? Wouldn't he have the antibodies?
No, I'm not too sure. He said he had a weird... If he was tested back then. Would the antibodies hang around, though?
Would they hang around? Well, this is the thing with this virus. We're learning, you know, more and more every week.
Absolutely. Now, in terms of this story out today in regards to childcare...
Yes.
You and I are on a unity ticket when it comes to this.
Yes, we are. We're on a unity ticket with Twiggy.
Yes.
with Weatherall. So, look, some sad news. The free childcare tap is being turned off.
Ooh.
So it looks like that could happen as soon as the end of this month. So we could be paying from next month.
Yes.
But it looks like it's going to be cheaper than what we were paying prior to the coronavirus hitting. So the reason for this is it looks like the government's going to increase the subsidies.
Okay.
Now, for anyone involved in childcare, they will know the initials CCS, which is enough to shudder the system. This is the whole way the subsidies work, mm-hmm. how, you know, determines who gets 50% from the government, who pays 50%, who pays this much, that much, you pay this much in advance. It's this whole system is very complex. Mm-hmm. If for some reason the wrong pay comes out for the childcare fees, it's a nightmare to fix it up with Centrelink and the like. It's a complete nightmare. The whole system needs an overhaul.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. The government's flagging a hybrid type system that mm-hmm. it's going to come up with till the end of the year. Mm-hmm. We're expecting an announcement on Friday for childcare. All the bad announcements happen on a Friday, don't they?
Take the trash out. That's when they take the trash out.
Take the trash out. Sorry, guys, we're not going to pay for your childcare.
But have a good weekend. Bye.
Yeah. Exactly. But in good news, my kids have gone back to childcare for the first time since the whole coronavirus crisis today.
So. Oh, so you need to go and check on to make sure that they're all good. What time do they finish?
They didn't want Nikki to leave when she dropped them off. Oh, I'll probably go and pick them up 4:30 this afternoon. But actually, don't know now what to do with my day. It's going to feel weird. I've got plenty of things to do. The hot water service is gone, so I've got to sort that. But aside from that,
okay,
it's not like I can go for a relaxing massage yet, you know.
11:59 on Friday.
Yes, that's right.
Well, Matt Tinney from Sunrise, thank you so very much for joining us in the studio. Good luck for the rest of your day. I look forward to a childcare update tomorrow.
Oh, yes. I'll let you know how they go. Probably they won't want to come home later when I pick them up, I reckon.
Bless.
A good day, Jenna.
You too. Thanks, Maddie. Coming up, why, unlike Philadelphia, Jero is not the city of brotherly love, as a local magistrate court found out recently, when we take you to the Wild West with Ben O'Shea. But joining me now is the Frio Dockers General Manager, Peter Bell. Belly, good morning. Thank you so very much for joining us on The West Live. How's life inside the Frio AFL bubble?
Hi, Jenna. Look, it's certainly very busy. As most would be aware, we're preparing to take our entire playing list to the Gold Coast early next week. So that's 47 players and up to 30 staff up there. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of logistics to go through. And then there's a lot of planning around what people are going to need, both in the Gold Coast, but also what their families will need back here in Western Australia, or as the case may have it in some circumstances, in Victoria or elsewhere.
Right. So how many families will be travelling, do you think?
Yeah, we're not sure as yet. Initially, it'll be mainly the sort of playing squad for an initial period of time.
Mm-hmm.
What we're also awaiting, Jenna, is the AFL have said after round three, they'll let us and West Coast and indeed the whole competition, but the other hub clubs in particular, where round six and seven are going to be. And I think there'll be a lot of partners and families that will be anxiously awaiting that. And if it is to continue in the Gold Coast, I think particularly around that school holiday period, the Western Australian school holiday period, we might have a number of families coming to visit then.
Mm-hmm.
But in the back of their minds is the fact that if they come back into WA after that, there's the 2-week quarantine period, which you can understand would make life really difficult for a lot of families. So they're the kinds of things that families are weighing up.
In terms of, what's the mood like in the club? Because this has taken probably a massive toll on the mental health, on not just the players, but the admin staff, all of, management and things like that. How's everyone coping?
There's a genuine excitement about football returning. That's tinged also with the fact that there's an awareness of a social license, if you like, that the rest of the community are granting football. So there's an acknowledgement of that as well. And the players and staff clearly aren't immune from some of the broader coronavirus reverberations which affect them and their families. So they know a lot of people are doing it tough. But if the majority of the community want football back, which it seems they do, the players are excited by that. But we can't deny that also there is anxiety about being in a high-performance centre for a long period of time away from your families.
Yeah.
And I guess the uncertainty is the worst part of that, Jenna, just not knowing exactly how long we're going to be up there. So we're working through that and supporting as best we can.
Mm.
There'll be some people that will do it really, really easily. And by no means are we saying that the environment's not going to be a wonderful environment with great facilities and all those sorts of things. But when you're taking into account the isolation and being away from your families. I think most people could understand that there is some anxiety for some people in those circumstances.
Oh, absolutely. And I guess that's probably why West Coast Eagles coach Adam Simpson is keen to ask the Premier for travel exemptions for players. Do you back his calls?
Yeah, I do. I'm aware also of what a brilliant job the Premier's done, and clearly an enormous approval rating at the moment. And I think most West Australians, if not all West Australians, would say the government's done a brilliant job. So we'll defer to the experts on that. We'll defer to the Chief Health Officer. We'll talk to them when appropriate. But obviously, we do have our eye on post-Queensland and getting back to Western Australia, and we're willing to work with the authorities on what's acceptable and what's not.
Yeah. Jesse Hogan, he's a gentleman that has been in the news for quite a number of issues. He had his poor foot injury. Apparently, he's back out on the track and doing really well. How's he doing? Do you think he's a sure start for round two?
Yeah, we're working through that. He's been away from football for a while, Jenna.
Yeah.
Round two might be a little bit soon for Jesse, and we're not exactly deciding on which round he might return in. We're just making sure that he's in a good space, which he is currently at the moment. He's training hard. We'll build him up from a football perspective, and then together with Jesse and the people close to Jesse, we'll decide when he might be available to play. But certainly, I can report that he trained very well yesterday, and every day he's getting back into the football groove, which is really good to see.
Absolutely. I guess taking with you when you guys head over there, you were talking about a number of support staff and things like that. Obviously, things like mindfulness and mental health and trying to curb the anxiety around everything that's really happening and trying to stay focused as an athlete is very tough. Are you kind of upping the ante when it comes to focusing on, guys, if you need someone to talk to, there's someone right here and things like that. So is mindfulness and that sort of stuff front of mind when you hit the road?
Yeah, absolutely. We are constrained by the number that we're allowed in our hub, high performance centre party, if you like. That's AFL mandated.
Yeah.
And also the amount of money we can spend on our staff is also AFL mandated. But clearly it is a huge priority. It's a huge priority in performance sport when in normal
times. That's the best of times.
And look, a lot of players, particularly, mindfulness is a part of their everyday routine.
Mm-hmm.
For some others, not so much. But, yeah, they'll be really well-resourced in that area. It's one of the priorities.
Mm. There was the story, which, a bit of a fluff and nonsense story. And you see stories that, Nat Fyfe, who is, a dual Brownlow medalist, the captain, the impact, probably the financial impact that this has had on some of the players. Like, he's the captain and he's still going to have to, he's going to drive a grain trucks for his dad and things like that in Esperance during this off season, I guess. The impact that this could have moving forward on people wanting to get into AFL, are you worried about the ramifications it could have on them in their performance as we heat the season back up?
So you're asking whether I'm worried about the performance of the players?
Trying to rebuild them and kind of gee them up almost.
Yeah, they're really professional, and as I said before, they're really excited to be back and playing.
Yeah.
But there is some question marks about how players will be able to deal with some of the challenges of, in our case, being in Queensland for an extended period of time. There's a bit of uncertainty about how well players dealt with the lockdown period as well, maintaining their elite level of fitness and training and just protecting yourselves against injury and those sorts of things. So there's some of the unknowns, Jenna, that we're all sort of a little bit in the dark about every single AFL club. Mm. We think that there will be more incidents of injury. That seems logical.
Yeah.
And then helping players deal with that and trying to manage your entire playing list with these sorts of challenges are some of the things that we think about. Longer term, I guess, there is going to be an ongoing negotiation, I suppose, between the AFL and the AFL Players Association around such matters as the TPP, so that's the amount of money that players receive.
Yeah.
Clearly, the rest of the community are doing it tough. The players are cognizant of that.
Of course.
But I think there's going to be a pretty strong negotiation about what's appropriate moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just don't think we can underplay that. These guys work hard. They don't all get paid the massive salaries that we see some of the marquee players. So you guys are doing a great job just trying to keep everyone on an even keel. Dockers General Manager Peter Bell, thank you so very much. very much for joining us. Good luck on the Gold Coast.
Thanks, Jenna. No problems.
So what do you think? The Dockers and Eagles want the Premier to give them travel exemptions. Well, not so much the Dockers. They're pretty keen just to follow the advice of Prem. But how do you feel about that? Should footy players be given special treatment? Let me know at the West Live at wanews.com.au. Joining me now is a man who's been working on a five-year project that is quite extraordinary. Senior emergency physician and clinical researcher, Professor Daniel Fadovich from Royal Perth Hospital. Professor, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. How was your day yesterday in the ED department at Royal Perth?
Good morning, Jenny. We had a particularly busy day yesterday. Lots of major trauma and lots of seriously unwell medical patients. So everybody was kept on their toes the whole day.
Is that unusual? Are Mondays specifically busy or are public holidays busy? Or is this just because everyone's now out and about moving around post-COVID?
Look, it's a bit of all of that. Mondays around Australia are known as the busiest day in emergency departments.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously combined with a public holiday, people driving around more, people being active and doing things, unfortunately leads to accidents and injuries and problems.
Mm.
And then we see the effects of that.
You've done an amazing job. And yesterday we were broadcasting live from Yagan Square, and we were in the middle of near the Digital Tower where we were watching some interesting footage that was shot called The Masquerade for Medical Research and Time Travel Through the ED, which is a five-year project that you've been working on. How did all of that come about?
Look, it's a bit of a story. So in 2012, I actually made another video with our medical illustrations department called The Art of the ED.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at the artistry of what we do in the emergency department, which is not well captured by just a still shot or a painting. And when I was doing that video, I came up with the idea of doing one related to time, because time and time-critical illness and all those kinds of things are obviously very important in the emergency department. And I worked very closely with the videographer, Steve Wise, in our medical illustrations department a couple of years ago to produce that video as part of a talk on time travel in the emergency department for our national conference that year, which was actually held in Perth.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's fascinating to watch, and I've been. You can tune in on YouTube, but you can also check it out at www.rphresearchfoundation.org.au. But there's also this great new, Masquerade for Medical Research campaign, where fashion illustrator Jamie Goode has designed a couple of virtual masks that we can buy in exchange for a donation to the foundation's COVID-19 research initiative. Are you excited by these new arms of philanthropy that we're seeing in the community?
It's a wonderful innovation and really highly appropriate at this time where we have to maintain physical distancing. Mm. And I have to say that looking at those masks online, I mean, some of them are really attractive and appealing.
Mm.
And ideally, people will support the foundation in its quest to get more research funding.
Absolutely. One thing that really stood out to me when I was watching these videos is the wet lab. I mean, I was just fascinated by what it actually involves. Can you tell me what it is? What is a wet lab at Royal
Yes.
Perth?
So in the emergency department at Royal Perth Hospital, we've got it's just a small room. It's called a wet lab. It's got a minus 20 freezer and a centrifuge,
mm-hmm.
which really just allows us to process immediately time-sensitive research blood samples, because when you're doing research on different diseases and different problems,
mm-hmm.
a lot of substances, chemicals in the blood, they actually break down very quickly or are very unstable at room temperature. So you actually have to process them quickly,
wow.
Usually like by putting them in a freezer,
mm-hmm.
so that you actually preserve the items of interest for you in the blood samples. And we're pretty sure that this is the only one in the Southern Hemisphere. So it just gives us the opportunity to do some kinds of research that nobody else can do.
Wow. So what would some of the diseases that you'd be looking for and testing for in the wet lab?
So one of them is to do with sepsis, severe infection. Sure. So a lot of people just think of blood vessels in the body as like plumbing for the blood to transport the blood with oxygen around the body.
Mm-hmm.
But blood vessels are actually lined with very complex structures that can get damaged in certain diseases like sepsis.
Right.
And they cause breakdown products and that we can measure in the blood. And also, we think sometimes that some of the standard treatments for severe infections might actually contribute to that damage. We don't know for sure. We're trying to work that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of thing that we're looking at in sepsis. The other thing is when people take some of the newer illicit drugs, again, they're very unstable at room temperature and they break down very quickly. And so we need to freeze those samples early in order to actually try and detect what was actually in the blood.
Wow. So it's almost like a superpower where you can kind of like just freeze, like in that episode of Charmed where they freeze the room just so they can just make sure that everything's all spick and span. That's fantastic and really fascinating and something that I really enjoyed when I watched these documentaries.
Yeah, well, thanks very much. I've never thought of it as a superpower. we like to try and be on the cutting edge of some of the different kinds of research.
Well, I think you are all superheroes, every one of you that works at Royal Perth Hospital and all of our frontline emergency and health and medical workers. So thank you so very much for joining us, Professor Daniel Fadovich from Royal Perth Hospital. Look forward to chatting to you again on the West Live very soon.
Thanks very much, Jenna.
Time Travel Through the ED is playing on the Yagan Square Digital Tower today. It's an amazing look at inside one of our busiest emergency departments. You can also check it out, as I said before, at www.rphresearchfoundation.org.au.
The Wild West.
Ben O'Shea, good morning. I would just like an update. Have you shaved yet?
No, but you know what? I'm
going to
go and see a barber.
Oh.
I'm going to go see a barber today and get a trim.
Okay. Yay. Do you want to give
a shout out to support some local business?
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly. I've never been to a barber, so I'm quite excited about it.
Fantastic.
There's one just around the corner that I've driven past, and I was like, oh, look at that. That seems like a thing that dudes do. But look, before I even get into that, can we just like take a step back here and recognize that you just dropped a Charmed reference into the show?
I love Charmed. I love
that's good. I applaud
Shannon Doherty. I can't Alyssa Milano. Yeah. Then I can't remember some of the other names, but they were great.
Well, I tell you who's not living a charmed existence.
Yes,
and that is our mate, the CEO of the Shire of Boddington.
Old
you remember
mate.
We spoke about him a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Last week, maybe.
Yes, indeed. Don't touch his footy oval, guys.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, the beloved and hallowed footy oval of Boddington. So Chris Littlemore is the chief executive down there, and we spoke about him because there were some golfers who were hitting practice shots on the footy oval and leaving divots. So
mm-hmm.
he took to the council Facebook page and referred to the culprits as mentally handicapped clowns, which is offensive on a number of levels.
Yeah.
So then we reported on that and reported that he had to make a pretty grovelling apology. And I spoke to the Shire president, Rod McSwain, down there, and he assured me that, you know, Chris had learned his lesson, but, you know, maybe the issue wasn't fully finished because it might come up in council and, you know, because he was bound by code of conduct just like all the other employees of the Shire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got an update for you. Chris has decided to fall on his sword and has taken an early retirement.
You got a scalp. Look at you, Ben O'Shea.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and my understanding was he had a couple of years left on his contract. And according to the Shire president, he had been there for a few years and had, in the president's words, turned the Shire around and was responsible for a few developments. And so his legacy down there is an interesting one, because there's certainly some positive things that he did, but he'll also be remembered for this very inappropriate spray that he did on social media. So, yeah, so the CEO there is riding off into the sunset a little bit early, and hopefully, I guess, there's a lesson there for whoever fills his shoes.
Or anyone, just to not post defamatory bullshit on social media. That might help as well.
Exactly. It's really not that difficult.
Yeah. Well, what's going on in Gero? We teased it at the top of the show. What's going on in the Magistrates Court, which appears to be your favourite place in WA?
It pretty much is, you know. It's so Philadelphia in America is known as the city of brotherly love. Mm-hmm. You certainly can't say that about Geraldton after a bloke up there has pled guilty to attacking his brother with a house brick after the two got into a physical altercation. And now this is the sort of, you know, sort of altercation that can only happen in Gero. Yeah. Like, we're not talking about sheep stations here. This was over a $50 debt.
Oh, that's not great.
So this bloke's entered his brother's home and started pestering him about owing the $50. The situation has escalated. There's punches thrown, and then the bloke has left and then come back with a brick and whacked his brother on the side of the head. And the brother's fine. He had a couple of stitches, but he survived. But it resulted in the brick flinger ending up in court. And the magistrate said to him, you know, like, your intent was to harm him. Do you understand the charge here? And the bloke has responded by saying, I can't stand the bugger.
Oh, wow. That's not...
So that's what he told the magistrate.
God. If anything... Okay, we've learnt two things today so far. Let's not post defamatory stuff on social media, and let's also put our bricks down when we're dealing with anybody.
With anybody, exactly. At least he was honest. And so he's been remanded into custody, and he's going to be back in court on July 31.
Fantastic.
And so that'll be, I think, a pretty open and shut case. But it's not all bad news for Gero. I have a positive.
Okay.
They're like all of these regional areas in Western Australia, they're looking at the fact that the borders are closed, people can't go interstate, mm-hmm. people can't go overseas. So there's some tourism opportunities here to get people from Perth heading out to the region, spending their dollars in those neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. And Gero's no exception. They want that money. They want a piece of that pie as well. So they've launched a tourism campaign that they've called Adventure Awaits. And if we know anything about the coverage of Geraldton in the Wild West, it's that there is a lot of adventure going on up in Gero. Don't worry about that.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, Crocodile Dundee level adventure.
For sure. Well, I think if all of us or some of us can get up to the Coral Coast in the Midwest, the sooner the better. I think it'll be a nice little road trip for all of us, Ben O'Shea.
Absolutely. Sounds amazing.
Sounds great. Well, you enjoy your trip to the barber shop. I look forward to seeing the results sometime soon. And thanks for joining us in the Wild West. We'll read about you more in Inside Cover tomorrow, and we'll chat to you on the West Live.
Sounds great.
That's it from me today. We'll be back from 8:45 over on thewest.com.au/live. That's tomorrow morning. Or catch up with us on the podcast whenever you get a chance. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The West Live with Jenna Clark. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.
It's the podcast that has Australia captivated. Claremont, The Trial. We take you inside the courtroom with over 3 million downloads already. Catch up on Claremont, The Trial at thewest.com.au or where you get your podcasts.